Welcome, believers! This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, Bimbo Jimbo James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Good evening, pal.
Good evening. So, right off the top, believers, I must apologize for, once again, the lack of a timely episode. This one, we can chalk up to not our dereliction of duty to you, believers, but rather a technical difficulty, a technical issue in our recording that we did not know about until all was said and done. I went to go edit our podcast that was about the episode of Lucha Underground 2 weeks ago, Last Man or Machine Standing, and it was rife with audio complications and errors, unusable, disappeared into the Amatrium, and that's what happened. So that's why there was not an episode prior to this week's episode, Till Death Do Us Part. So apologies there, believers. We're not bailing on you. It just was unforeseen circumstances. So you're going to get yet another El Guapo Jeff Budd patented, copyright registered trademark, dose of dose. So we are going to be talking about, again, the aforementioned Last Man or Machine Standing and Till Death Do Us Part. So, Jeff, surprise, buddy. We're talking about two. Double guns. So, here we go. Yeah, sorry about that. You know what was great, too, is I was watching, well, not great, but I was watching the most recent one, Till Death Do Us Part. I was like, oh, yeah, we totally predicted that, and we're going to sound just like a-holes on the Dose of Dose, being like, yeah, we called that, but we really did. The entire No Moss match, which we previewed on the episode, we laid it out pretty much exactly how it played out in terms of Joey Ryan. We're skipping ahead. We'll get to that. But in terms of Joey Ryan and Eva Lise getting involved, we called all of that. So there it is. Our douche
You'll
chills.
You'll just have to take our word for it, I guess.
Suppose.
Oh,
so.
Man. Bummer.
I think we have enough goodwill with the believers that they'll take us at our word or not, and screw you. All right.
Well, I think they're like, well, who would lie about that?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
What would be the point?
Yeah, that's true. So let's start with Last Man or Machine Standing, and we got we have to start with the vignette. Melissa Santos still missing Phoenix, and Dragon Azteca Jr. sort of just sliding in there and trying to sort of
soaring in as the Eagle Tribe does it,
trying to soar out of the friend zone and swoop Phoenix's woman. What did you think about this vignette?
No, I mean, I liked it fine, except for it just seemed a little out of left field that Azteca even had like the relationship to be able to talk to her like that.
Yeah,
and I mean, I guess we were always talking about, with Puma gone, the top faces were Phoenix, who was already sort of rivaling Puma as a top face anyway, because his storylines were always really important. And then Azteca sort of rising to that role. So now with Phoenix dead and Puma in a different company, it's Azteca, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, and you're right. It's he didn't really have that kind of relationship with Melissa before this.
He didn't really have that relationship with Phoenix either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if Aerostar was having that conversation with her, that would make more sense to me.
That'd be cool. Like, I can tell you your future. We have beautiful children. Or you die alone if you don't go out with me. Something like that. I did like that we got to see the amulet again in the vignette, which I think will play a role in Phoenix coming back to life for good or for ill. From there, we start out with the Haunted House match. It was a cage match filled with weapons, no escape, pinfall, or submission only. And we mentioned this when we first recorded it, but just the fact that they had like an axe and like a knife on the cage, I was like, well, there's no way they're going to be able to use this. Mil Muertes actually used the effing knife in this match. I liked it. Jeff, you did not like that so much, and I thought you gave a good reason for why.
Well, basically, it's because of how he was wielding the knife. It just didn't seem very, you know, realistic to me. It would be more of a stabbing motion or like an actual attack with it. Like, we always compare this show to video games. It would be like Cody in Final Fight. You know, that's how you use a knife in a battle. And you said that it happened so quick and fluidly that you were fine with it. For
yes.
me, as soon as he used the knife, I was kind of watching for it because I wanted to see what he was going to do with it. And sadly, it was kind of like how I predicted it to go. I wasn't sure that they were going to have the kind of wound that they did, so I'll give them props for that. I thought it looked good. But as far as the execution goes, I didn't much care for it.
Yeah, and I see your point to that because it wasn't a natural way of using the knife, but I stand by the fact that when I watched it live and it went so smoothly and was it left such a grievous and brutal wound on the Mac, I was like, okay, that's about as good as you're gonna get with that. So I yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, oh, I was just gonna say, and you know what? You gotta give him credit then, because the point of a wrestling match is really to watch it live or to watch it once. You're not supposed to study it and analyze it, because that's when you can pick it apart. So, I mean, if it looked good to you in that first go, then I mean, mission accomplished, you know?
Yeah, before that match got underway, though, we got Katrina and Melissa Santos getting into it after Melissa refused to announce Katrina as accompanying Mil Muertes. By the way, Katrina looking maybe is the best she ever has, and
They
she,
both looked great, man.
yeah, they looked fantastic. And Katrina really took it to Melissa Santos. I thought this was a good pre-match beatdown to build on the story between the two of them, and of course Katrina eventually getting her comeuppance. Maybe the Azteca pairing is some type of maybe a mixed tag with Azteca and Melissa taking on Katrina and Mil. What did you think about the pre-match shenanigans between the two of them?
I loved the pre-match shenanigans. Katrina really did kick her ass, which was great. It looked good, and it also looked sexy at the same time. So I double enjoyed it, I suppose.
Yeah.
I agree with you that with Phoenix gone, she kind of needs that male partner if she were to ever get involved in some sort of feud with them. So I think it will be Melissa and Azteca versus, I mean, Katrina and Mil Muertes, I suppose. But at the same time, Mil Muertes and Katrina, especially post-match, their relationship is so weird. And with
Yes.
Jeremiah Crane becoming Jeremiah Snake, I don't even know if he's still interested in her or if they'll ever have contact again. I don't know what Jeremiah's like mindset is at this point.
What's
Is he
going on with
still
that Ouija
himself,
board?
or is he some sort of like snake zombie? I don't get it.
What's going on with that Ouija board, Jeremiah?
And I mean, I don't want to crap on the story too much because they're pretty good with tying up loose ends, even if it's like way down the road. So, I mean, we may end up finding out what the Ouija board's about, but not anytime soon, it sounds like.
That makes me sad.
And this whole season, I mean, it's janky.
Sometimes I think so. Maybe we'll get a Gift of the Gods match between Azteca and Mil. Melissa Santos maybe makes her return there, takes out Katrina, or somehow a distraction helps Azteca get the win against Mil, and that
It's
will
going to
lead
be a
to the
huge
tag
feather in his
match.
cap, man.
Absolutely, and that will lead to the inevitable tag match.
Which I'll enjoy that too. I mean, that'll be fine.
Yeah, so maybe. I don't know. Maybe it would be for, in terms of stakes, maybe Katrina gets her hands on the other half of that medallion and they put that up for grabs. Maybe one half for one half or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So
And
we.
then that's how they could bring Phoenix back, and
Yeah.
yeah. Exactly. And
Lot.
maybe that'll be like the final nail in the coffin as far as the relationship between Mil Muertes and Katrina as well, because I mean, they're just not gelling anymore.
Yeah, maybe because maybe Mil wants to come back to life too. Maybe
Oh, wouldn't that be interesting?
he has a talk with her. He's like, I don't want to be this damn Death Knight for you anymore if you're not going to be my lich. An emphasis on L, lich. So maybe that's, so she gets her hand, or maybe Mil gets his hands on half the other half of the medallion, and then they set up that match for a sort of a winner take all. Deal there. That would be fun. I'd be into that. But Mil Muertes did prevail over the Mac with a super flatliner through the table. I really enjoyed this match, and I didn't like the name of the match. I would have picked something cooler than a Haunted House match, but I really did enjoy it. So Melissa Santos got taken out, and that means that Famous B, who is back, just happened to be here in a wheelchair. He decides to take over on ring announcing duty, which was very convenient, as we pointed out before.
Yeah, what a great coincidence.
Yeah, it's very good luck for Antonio Cueto that he had a backup ring announcer there. And
Very fortunate.
Famous B's first match to announce, he has to announce the Savage Jake Strong making his return, taking on Aerostar. We'll get through this very quickly. It was less than 3 minutes, but it didn't feel like really like a squash match, right?
No way. No, I thought Aerostar at least looked like he was holding his own.
Yeah, and it felt like he got in most of the offense, and Jake just kind of no-sold some of it and then got the ankle lock to finish it. While he
Which
was...
his size compared to him, I mean, that kind of has to be how it goes.
Yeah, in a way, I do
I mean,
have...
I don't want to dismiss somebody like an Aerostar or a Drago or something versus him, but he's still sort of being billed as invincible.
Yes.
And he is such a physical presence. You know, he's very intimidating. I mean, his physical presence was intimidating in the WWE, and that's with guys who are closer to his size. I mean, in the temple, it's very noticeable how big he is.
It is incredibly noticeable how big he is. That being said, Aerostar, Drago, those kinds of guys. I don't know. I was thinking about it, and like, you know, we did an episode many moons ago about, you know, wrestlers that we'd like to see enter Lucha Underground and stuff like that. I want to keep the luchadors, like, the most special part about it.
Oh, I get what you're saying. No, listen, I've got... I mean, Jake Strong's fine, but I would have been fine with him not in the temple, too. I would also be happy with just people that I don't know personally or recognize from, like, previous wrestling that I've watched.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I appreciate Jake Strong being in the temple. I'm a fan of his.
He's doing fine, yeah.
Yeah, my point more with that is that... Dude, Aerostar's, to me, you know, for lack of a better term, a Lucha original. Drago's a Lucha original. These are guys that, like, they're top guys to me. So I don't want to see them get squashed by pretty much anybody. And, you know, unless it's, like, some type of supernatural thing like Matanza, you know?
Yeah, and like we were saying, even though the match was brief, I thought it was choreographed in a way where at least it didn't look like Aerostar was getting squashed. He just didn't win.
Yeah, agreed. But so Jake Strong locked in the ankle lock, kept it on him, and Drago makes the save. And I bring this up again because we just last week, or compared to this episode, had Drago leaving, saying he wasn't sure when he would see Aerostar again. And then just in the next episode, he returns and makes the save on Aerostar. It felt like this was not the right episode to have that happen in, right?
No, I completely agree. I mean, for that to have any sort of significance or weight, you got to let it, you know, stew for a little bit. You got to let that, you know, you have to have him go away long enough for us to miss him and to realize that his character has gone on some sort of like self-finding quest or something like that. And then I was saying the first time we recorded this that it would have been fine if maybe what they did was had a mini feud going on between Aerostar and Jake Strong, where maybe Aerostar wins the first match, and then, of course, that enrages Jake. You start having Jake Strong have the obsessions that we have with Jack Evans right now.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, we already know that Jake does not take losing well. This time, it would be, you know, he himself who lost, as opposed to just one of his teammates, you know? So he would, like, really snap and go after Aerostar, and it would be vicious. And then you have Drago come out of nowhere, which we haven't seen him for a while, and swoop in and save his friend. That, to me, that's just kind of how it would naturally be written, I would think. This, I mean, even if you wanted to just do it this match, exactly how they did it, you got to at least, like, book this a couple weeks in it, like, out, so that it's still Drago's gone for a while.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you even said, I think the first time we recorded our review of this episode, it's like, and for all we know, we're going to get Drago again next week. And
dun, dun, dun. Man, you know what? Maybe we've been watching too much Underground, because we really are able to predict what's going on now. Dude, that means I predicted something in all three acts of this upcoming episode.
You did. You did. So Drago made
I'm on the payroll. That's why this season's so bad. I've got too many distractions.
Jeff was at the tapings. So then we got the big vignette from this episode, which is Worldwide Underground giving Johnny and Taya their pre-wedding gifts. But the big takeaway from this was that Ricky Mundo kills Johnny's agent, stabs him to death with a pen. What did you think about what was going on with Ricky as his descent into madness continues? And what does that mean about what he did to Angelico?
Well, I mean, it's bad news, because if it's exactly what he did to Angelico, which is what that doll is, you know, heavily implying, that means Angelico was killed off screen, which I don't think anybody's happy with.
No.
We were both huge fans of his. And then for a character to be taken out like that, that's always the worst. I'd rather they just not mention him, just in case he ever should come back.
Yeah, maybe he had just some sort of ambiguous fate. You know, well, I guess they could leave it ambiguous.
But... they could still do that. And who knows, maybe that's going to be the case someday. But I was fine with the agent being killed, because I was just happy to see him again.
Yeah.
So that we got some closure. You talked about whether or not Ricky had killed him or was going to kill him many episodes back.
Yeah, and you know, we didn't really need him, so it was nice to tie up that loose end.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way.
That does bring us to the main event of the first episode that we're talking about, the last man or machine standing match. Really should have been the last luchador or machine standing match, but I digress. Pentagon Dark taking on Cage.
Skeleton Ninja or machine standing.
Yeah, exactly. Pentagon Dark versus Cage for the Lucha Underground Championship. I thought this lived up to the hype. And like you said a couple episodes back or an episode back, that this has become a full-fledged pro wrestling feud between Pentagon and Cage. I thought they pulled out all the stops in this and did a fantastic job, and it was a perfect capper to their feud. What did you think about this match?
Yeah, looking back, and I didn't mention this the first time I recorded it, I think this is one of their like better handled feuds in Lucha Underground history. I like this one a lot. I'll always enjoy Mil Muertes versus Phoenix.
Yes.
And I liked a lot of the Prince Puma, Johnny Mundo stuff in season one, where they were friends and then Johnny wanted the belt. You know, a lot of that I thought was and they had great matches. So I'd say those are probably like my three favorites as far as singles competition goes. And I thought the match was great. I thought it was a real crowning achievement as far as everything that they've built up to. It was vicious, real power moves by both characters, which I'm not surprised by. And I love the finish as far as how decisive it was. And then at the same time, it's like, but I didn't feel like Cage was weak.
No.
Or, you know, like truly defeated. He was more like incapacitated.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a perfect word for it. I agree with you. I loved their use of the chairs in this. Like the chair shots were Attitude Era brutal. I thought the package pile driver on the chairs was one, an incredibly ambitious spot that I thought they were going to, you know, potentially botch, because I mean it's hard to balance that much human mass on those steel chairs
on those types of chairs, on flimsy chairs. And I told you I always get nervous about those types of spots, because unlike those tables, I mean those chairs, they're not as yielding, and where you were talking about maybe they'd slip off and it would look dumb, I was thinking they'd slip off and somebody could really get hurt, and you know, that's the last thing we want.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was going to be the finish, but it wasn't. We had more yet to go. Pentagon with the pilmanizing Cage's arm and then breaking not one, but both of the machine's adamantium arms. I loved that. Like you mentioned on the previous recording, sorry to keep referencing it, but it is what it is. Pentagon silencing the crowd for them to hear the bone break.
The bone snap.
Yeah.
Because they were too loud during the first arm break. He had to shut them up. Also, how great is it that the temple really does kind of shut up when Pentagon asks them to?
He is the ruler.
He is in complete control of that temple.
Yeah, it is his dark
eating
place.
Eating out of the palm of his bony hand.
Yeah, which is why, I mean, it speaks to why he is getting the push and the championship run that he is, because I mean he's the guy.
he absolutely is the guy. I can't think of anybody who's kind of wielding that level of charisma in the temple, and that's not to say that people don't love a lot of the characters.
I mean
boy, they were chanting for Cage plenty of times during the match, doing the Terminator soundtrack as well. But I mean, yeah, it's Pentagon, dude. I mean, you called it, I don't know if it was a season or two ago, Pentagon and Puma in the ring. I mean, it's like a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was still Puma at like the height of his popularity. If anything, Pentagon's like more popular now than he was then.
Yeah, it's insane. And the thing about it is with the cheers, which I would argue that Pentagon was even like, it's not that the crowd split was in such a way. And Pentagon was being such a son of a bitch, too. It's like, it's just like, and they still cheered him so voraciously. It's impressive. It is
a bloodthirsty temple.
Yeah.
That crowd is insane. I mean, I love it, though. I love the audience's participation and interaction on these shows, because the temple itself is a character in Lucha Underground.
Yes.
You know, and I feel like the talent really feeds off of it. And then also, it tells more of a story that way. And I think it showcased the best in Pentagon matches, because they really react to everything he does appropriately.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we see it with other people, too.
Yeah, and I think they just really bought into that character and everything. But anyway, Pentagon broke both of Cage's arms. I really appreciate it, because like you said, he wasn't defeated. He was incapacitated.
Cage, he would have kept fighting if he could, yeah.
Cage trying to pull himself to his feet without use of his arms, only to get stomped through the cinder block that he brought out himself, a beast of his own making, and that's what ended it. I thought that was fantastic. A great capper to this feud. It's going to probably take Cage off TV for a little while. Maybe not, though. Maybe he just comes back with Mortal Kombat Jack's arms. Who knows?
Well, I mean, that would be sick. Although, like I said, maybe that's just what they look like underneath the synthetic flesh anyway. I don't know. I don't know enough about Cage's backstory as far as, is the government mass producing these things? Is he on the run? I would have loved for Killshot and Dante Fox to be sent to take him down and bring him back.
Oh my god,
somewhere.
That would be great.
That is like these badass mercenary operatives. How great would that have been? And like this sick handicap match between the three of them?
That would have been fantastic.
They should have done something like
they
that.
They could still do something with
it. Well,
them.
If Donnie Fox comes back, I'd like to see. Or if they just had other soldier characters or something. And I mean, Killshot's a soldier of fortune, I think, at this point, so he could definitely be brought in to do it.
Yeah. That ended Last Man or Machine Standing. The next episode we have to talk about is Till Death Do Us Part. It is the wedding of Johnny Mundo and Taya on Lucha Underground. Overall thoughts just on this episode, because you texted me about it earlier.
This was the most fun episode I've watched in a while on Lucha Underground. I really was picking up a lot of what they were dropping throughout the story, as far as the vignettes and the final part of this episode goes. And the two matches before it, I didn't really have a problem with. I have a few little nitpicky things, but nothing major. I'd say as far as satisfaction after an episode this season goes, it's one of the higher ones for me.
See, for me, that's how I felt about the last episode. I thought this was okay in terms of everything. But we did get a vignette to kick it off. Johnny Mundo and the Worldwide Underground are preparing for the wedding. They're in lime green wedding tuxedos. What did you think about their wedding look?
Wedding look was superb. I find PJ Black so delightful.
Yeah, he is.
His hair, his facial expressions, just his general attitude. I mean, you know, if I can't pretend to be Johnny Mundo in the Worldwide Underground, I want to be PJ Black, you know?
Yeah, I feel like he's really just gaining in more and more prominence. They need to use him more. But in this vignette, we get a surprise for Mundo, and it's none other than Joey Wrestling, a.k.a. Joey Mercury, reuniting Johnny and Joey, the famous tag team, and Eminem from WWE. I thought that was a nice, nice touch for this. What do you think about Joey Wrestling showing up?
No, I loved it. I thought that was great. And I like it because the way the story is going is they're treating the wedding seriously.
Yeah.
You know, but with those characters.
Yes.
So it's a nice nod. It's a cool touch. And then also it's great because then it bumps Ricky from the wedding party.
Yeah. So because PJ Black was going to be best man.
Was going to be best man. And Ricky starts freaking out because things are changing.
Yeah. And now Ricky is just the ring bearer and even had his air guitar taken away.
I was thinking about that. I wish Lucha Underground was going on back when we were in college, because I feel we were doing stuff like this, but it would have been nice to copy these exact things.
Yeah.
Because we never took the air guitar away from somebody, but we did shoot down a roommate of mine a few times for trying to join in on some of our shenanigans. And I could so see us taking air guitar away from him.
Absolutely.
If we had known about this.
Absolutely. His little Rene doll.
I loved the little doll being a flower girl.
I did too. I think that
was ring bearer. They do these little attention to detail things that I find just delightful on this show.
It's true that the devil, but in Lucha Underground's case, the angels in the detail with just all those little things that they do. So that was a great introduction of Joey Mercury being in Lucha Underground. He is going to be Johnny's best man. Famous B, he is still ring announcing because Melissa is still out. Yeah, it's great. And he once again has to announce a match with the Savage, Jake Strong.
He's kind of moved past it now, though, you know?
Yeah,
they don't
he respects
really have,
it.
Like, a relationship anymore.
They saved his leg, so he's fine.
Yeah, I guess he's got no hard feelings. He's a professional.
Several surgeries later, but Jake Strong versus Drago, just as you predicted, take our word for it. And I don't know. I pushed
the fast forward button on this feud here.
Yeah, I had a problem with this because I feel like, yeah, like you said, they're pushing the fast forward button. I get that it's logical that he would face Drago, but I don't know. I just didn't want to see it like 2 weeks in a row, maybe do like a vignette or something with this. But Drago gets defeated. He lasted a little longer than Aerostar, but somehow I don't know. Just it didn't. I don't know why they're rushing through it, like you said.
Well, because I don't think it's going to be anything long lasting, and I think they're just trying to put Drago and Aerostar back together again.
That's what I feel like they're rushing through, though.
Oh, as far as like their alliance. Well, I mean, I just feel like it's business as usual. I think they want you to move past that Drago is a slave. You know what I mean?
What did we love two episodes ago?
Oh, well, I mean,
Drago taking off and Aerostar saying he knows he'd be back, but not this soon and not this just like emphatically.
I think the problem is they've decided that other things have a higher priority than the significance of what that storyline could have been. They want to put Aerostar and Drago back together again because people enjoy watching the two of them in action. And they don't necessarily want Jake Strong to be bogged down fighting these guys forever. It's just now it's kind of him versus worthwhile opponents. You know what I mean? These are like his first real challenges to me. Even though he is being triumphant, it's like these are real opponents, and then they're also getting out of there before he can do any significant damage. My whole thing is kind of what you were just talking about when we were covering the last episode. Because it takes the two of them to sort of escape him, it automatically underpowers them.
Yes.
In comparison. And I was like, what's the end game match here? Is it going to be a handicap match? Because that sucks.
Yeah, that sucks, you know?
And,
because they'll
and
probably
Jake Strong
lose.
Has no friends. You know, there's nobody he can bring into this. And he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would even want to join forces with anybody to fight them. I think he just wants to fight them. So, I mean, I just don't understand exactly how it's going to go. Also, Drago had like a couple of parts in the match where I thought like his strength was supposed to be sort of similar to Jake Strong's, and I don't know, it looked weird to me.
Well, he does have relative dragon strength.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, well, he's supposed to be a dragon, so it's not like Jake Strong could overpower him the same way maybe he could Aerostar, but I don't know. It's the size difference is a little too weird.
I'm confused. I thought Drago was supposed to disappear and go soul searching.
Yeah, but we know that's not happening. He came back and said, Drago's fine now, okay? He's just fine. So you just deal with it.
I don't know. I'm nervous.
He's not going away. He's back.
I'm nervous. Well, and post-match, Aerostar made the save. So, yes, the Super Friends are reunited fully, undermining one of the best vignettes of
Phoenix.
This season. Yes, well, two of the Super Friends are reunited, undermining one of the best vignettes of the season. That did take us to the No Moss match, which also this feels like rushed into a stipulation like this, but it is Exolicious taking on Jack Evans. What did you think of the match?
I mean, I'm watching this match and I'm thinking to myself, what is the point of this? Like, why? I'm not believing the significance of their feud.
Yeah.
And neither one of them strikes me as the kind of person that would even participate in a No Moss match.
Yep.
It's not really like their fighting style. One thing I did like at the beginning, and I've mentioned it before about Jack, he has such a great commanding voice and he's able to speak very well from the ring without a microphone.
Yes.
Where everybody's able to hear him. I continue to love that because I feel that's a very rare gift. And it's something that I think really translates well if you can do it right when you're in the wrestling ring. The match itself is fine because both of these guys are phenomenal athletes. My big problem with it, though, is Exolicious wins, but he wins with help. And
yeah.
So what did he prove?
I agree with you. It's not like Jack Evans was resorting to underhanded tactics or had the worldwide
underground help.
It's weird.
Jack had like basically a straightforward match as far as what a no moss match is. I mean, they made like this big deal that he brought a chair into the ring.
It's like it's no rules.
And also, I mean, it's Lucha Underground. It's illegal fighting. Men have died in that ring.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. The stipulation felt rushed.
Joey Ryan was as corny as possible, and that was so tacked on and forced. The fact that they called him Jack's partner, what? Because they fought in one match together as a team.
Yeah, which that
and
was
then
the
him
worst
saying
too.
It's like, hey man, this is too much. And then the after the match, the celebration where he has to explain to himself that
I'm a good guy now.
I'm a good guy. What is happening?
I
have no problem with him becoming a good guy and joining forces with him. We did predict this.
Take our word for it.
Motley Crue trios team that may eventually become champions. Who knows?
You think so? I think so, too.
My whole thing is this one is so forced. Where is it in terms of storytelling versus Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and Angelico? That had a real story to it. Ivelisse and Son of Havoc were introduced as a couple. And that's fine. Then you start seeing how their relationship is kind of getting a little tense because Son of Havoc kept screwing up a lot in the beginning of season one. And Ivelisse wasn't having it. And she's, you know, a bad bitch. Then she was in the ring kind of defending their honor as a couple. And Helico goes against her and is, you know, inappropriate. And that's insulting to both of them.
Especially
and makes
in
an
this
instant...
day and age.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, in 2015 it was sort of okay.
Well, I'm just saying it. If he tried that stuff in season four, he would have been fired.
And Helico would never have been as popular as he became.
Super heel.
Yeah.
But you're right, of course.
There were a lot of matches. It was very gradual. They become a team reluctantly. You know, there's a lot of vignettes that go into that. They go into that tournament not liking each other. They come out of it, you know, with this newfound respect. They're still sort of on eggshells with each other. They didn't become a solid team to me until season two.
Yeah. You summed it up perfectly. And, you know, I can't do any better than that. So let's just move on. You're on the money. Well done, brother. So I'm with you on that. Mundo, we go back to Mundo and Worldwide Underground getting ready for the wedding as Jack literally is crawling backstage and PJ says, I don't think he's going to make the wedding. Jack Evans is such a piece of S this season. Like he's not even going to be at the wedding. Like, are you kidding me? You missed.
Well, they never should have booked his match the same night.
I know, but still.
But you also said, when we recorded it last time.
It's ridiculous. It's completely absurd that he's going to miss the wedding. But that is in fact the case. no wedding for Jack Evans. And so Ricky wants to take his place and they all yell at him. And and that's when the little doll tells Ricky to do the job that she told him to do. And also Mundo flipping out when Ricky called the ring stupid. He's being a real groomzilla.
I was just going to say that.
So Ricky's getting...
It's a big day for Johnny. He was nervous. I get it.
Like, haven't they noticed Ricky being super weird? Maybe they
should... No, that's what's so great about it is they're all so self-absorbed that they don't realize what's going on with Ricky. I'm actually
That's
really
a fantastic
enjoying,
point.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying that story. I'm kind of sad because I wish we could have seen more of Ricky just with them, honestly, because I really like them as a unit. But yeah, Johnny's so wrapped up in his own thing. PJ Black is completely out to lunch constantly. Jack is... got one foot out the door as far as with this group goes. So yeah, none of them pick up on what's going on with Ricky. They just take turns crapping on him.
Yeah, it's like, just go, Jack. Just go. You know, you don't, like...
He's still friends with all of them, though.
Don't do me any favors. Yeah, well, are you? Because you've been a pretty lousy friend. So, you know what? We'll smile and nod
he
in the locker room.
Bought some nice presents for them. And...
We'll smile and nod in the locker room and everything, and we don't have a problem with you, but, you know, we're not running buddies anymore. You've made that clear. We're just not. You made it clear. You made
I
bed.
Still like Jack with them. He's a good fit. And he and PJ were friends before they joined Worldwide Underground.
They were, but you know,
fighting dragons, and I don't know what happened with Jack, and then all of a sudden he decides he doesn't do that anymore.
So we go to the wedding now. Famous Bee is officiating because
I loved it.
Pentagon broke Father Rick O'Shea's arm, and so we get Mundo Black Mercury coming out. What was it? PJ Black was best ish man. And Mercury was bestest man. The cool note here is with when Taya comes out is that cheerleader Melissa is one of the bridesmaids, and the beautiful Brenda is the maid of honor. The cool Easter egg, which Taya later posted to her Instagram, at their real life wedding, cheerleader Melissa and Brenda were her real life, two of her real life bridesmaids. So I thought,
that's nice.
Yeah, that was pretty cool that they did that. And the other thing that is with this is that it confirms that cheerleader Melissa is in fact still Mariposa, at least in my estimation.
Yeah. Or else why would she be there?
Yeah, exactly. So that brings us to that one. Then we cut away and we see Ricky and his doll backstage, and he frees Matanza from his cage. And we're underway. Famous B is like super over the top with the officiating.
Excellent job. And also promoting himself in the midst of it as well, too, which is great. I could not have asked for that to go better as far as how he acted.
If anyone has any objections, and then we get Antonio Cueto almost on cue. I was just thinking in my head, hold on. but he said he has a gift for them, and he asked them to ring the bell, and he's got tacos for everybody.
Tacos for everybody. Just the way he said it was great.
It really was.
I can't get over how awesome this was. The wedding for me made this entire episode. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. It was super over the top, but it was really fun.
Just what it should be, though. And I mean, did you not love all of Brenda's little side notes?
Oh, I loved her. Kept calling Antonio Grandpa.
She kept calling him Grandpa, and then she said Ricky was cute, but his little doll was like too dirty or something like that.
Yeah, too dirty for her.
Yeah, she had a million great lines about everything. I loved it.
But much like every pro wrestling wedding, not everything is meant to work out like it's supposed to. Matanza shows up, Jeff, and what happens?
He wrecks shop.
So Matanza starts destroying everybody. I think he destroyed all the members of the wedding party, and threw there was not a taco table left standing.
He smashed everybody on the taco tables. I loved it because all the guys rushed him at first when he first got into the ring, other than Ricky. Ricky's outside because
laughing like a maniac.
Well, first off, the wedding party, or only the wedding party, is supposed to be in the ring, so they threw him out.
Oh, that's
don't make
right.
it awkward.
That's right. Yeah, don't make this weird, Ricky.
See, that's what they think. Ricky just makes things weird when they tell him to do something.
Well,
he still is
an intern.
He never graduated, did he?
I don't think so, and nor will he, not at this rate.
I'm not going to fail you. I can't give you a passing grade either. Ricky will get an incomplete. So he's laughing maniacally in the audience, just totally enjoying it. But I loved all the guys rushed him, and then there was a shot of PJ Black when everybody else was still fighting Matanza, and he was just standing outside, like, shaking his hand in the head, like, oh, man, this is intense. But he wasn't doing anything.
I was just bummed that the nuptials were ruined.
And the taco table was destroyed. There was one guy in the audience who actually looked bummed when one of the tables was destroyed.
Taya got busted open at her own wedding.
Like I said, all of this was awesome. And then it got to the point where it was just Mundo fighting Matanza, and I thought, dear God, imagine if Johnny Mundo was sacrificed to the gods at the wedding. How freaking intense would that have been?
Was watching with Brian Primetime Smith, and he too was worried about that, or if Taya would be sacrificed.
Then I thought it was going to be Taya after Mundo was defeated and Taya was alone in the ring. And I thought, oh man, then Mundo and the Worldwide Underground have to go on a quest to somehow find her soul and bring her back to life. I would have actually loved it.
I actually only thought cheerleader Melissa was going to be sacrificed because we'd never seen her before, and she can just go back to being Mariposa after that.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought was going to happen. Anything else you want to say about the wedding of Taya and Johnny Mundo?
Well, just that we predicted that Ricky would be responsible for destroying their wedding.
Yes, we did. You take our word for it.
Yeah. I don't know if the, I mean, we didn't expect it to be through Matanza, but I thought that was a great twist. That was a good thing to do.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, it was. It was unexpected. That is going to do it for us this week here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.